Good evening, and welcome to this special Mother's Day episode of Effingham Talks. On this episode, we have some moms who have a positive impact on not only their own families, but our community as well. We are broadcasting from our home, the beautiful Stillwell Pines event venue located just outside of Springfield. If you are looking for a venue, you can find them on the web at www.stillwellpines.com, on Facebook at Stillwell Pines Event Venue, or give them a call at 912-665-2631 for a personal tour of the facility. We would also like to thank Stitches and Sawdust and Metal Clad Industries for their support. Today on this Mother's Day episode, we have Carla Dean, new teacher induction coordinator, Sandy Gibson, mother advisor of the Effingham Rainbow Assembly, secretary of the Jerusalem Lutheran Church and board member of the Manor House, food pantry and thrift store, Kristen Wirt, director of the Trutland House, and Sonia Scott, entrepreneur. All of these are moms, and we have some nanas with us as well. Thank y'all for joining us today. Miss Carla, we're going to start with you.
Sure.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into teaching.
So I was a stay-at-home mom for many years, and when my children started school, I volunteered at the school. I was doing lots of volunteering, PTA, which it used to be PTA, now we're tends to be PTO, but I did a lot of volunteering there. And Cheryl Christian over at South Effingham Elementary,
Yes, ma'am.
Encouraged me. She said, "You live here. Why don't you go and be a teacher?" So that's what I did. Went back to college because I love children. I did teach dance for many years, so I've got a dance background. So
wow.
I've always taught something, I think, throughout my whole life.
So what is your role and responsibilities with the Board of Education?
So my current role is new teacher induction coordinator, but I've had many roles. I taught for 14 years, taught middle school, love middle schoolers. So then I was an assistant principal, and I've had a couple of other. I was test coordinator for the district. So the role that I have now towards, and this is getting towards the end of my career, it is wonderful. I thoroughly enjoy being new teacher induction coordinator.
So how long has that program existed with the Board of Education, or that role?
So this is, there's always been some form of help for new teachers, but it was very small. So you maybe had one person or two people trying to go in and just see all the first year teachers. But Dr. Ford came to me and he said, "We need to build a program." So the program has been 3 years. So this is the third year of the program. And
okay.
It, you know, is grown quite big. We are definitely, we're supporting years 1, 2, and 3 teachers. We support new to Effingham teachers. We support social workers that are working in the school, school psychologists, counselors. So we're supporting across the board, you know, all of our new people.
So Dr. Ford saw that in you, that you could help with these new teachers coming in, which is fantastic.
Yes, I think it, you know, and I'm a mom. I think relationships, that is the key to everything. It's having a relationship. And I love to get out and talk to people. I love to mentor people. So this whole program and the ladies that are on my team, I've got a team made up of 8 retired educators. And the one thing that, you know, everyone has in common, and they were hand selected for being new teacher induction, a lot of what we do is mothering. It, you know, it may be a teacher that came to us from a different district, but they're, you know, teachers are going to struggle. So a lot of times you have to have that mothering instinct of, I want to help. How can I help you? And we're non-evaluative. We don't evaluate. We just help.
And y'all have quite a few that are out from out of state or just even out of the area that might not have any family around.
We sure do.
So what are some of the needs outside of the normal curriculum that you do to help the new teachers adjust?
So we're helping them adjust. When we come in, each school, before school starts that year, each school is going to have a meeting time where those new teachers are going to come in, and it's amazing to see when they come in as a group. It's like a new cohort coming in, and they really do develop those friendships in. And again, like I said, it's relationship building.
Yes.
With their peers. We help them with classroom management. We help them with learning of, you know, where do I go if I'm sick? What's the best doctor to go to? I mean, we really, whatever those teachers need, we're there to answer those questions. A lot of times my ladies will know a little teacher is expecting before anybody else, because they really confide in our team.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. So what is one of the biggest obstacles, or some of the obstacles that a new teacher in a new area face?
I just think it's a lot of times they'll feel isolated. You're working all day, and then, teaching doesn't end at 4 o'clock. It is, you know, there's a lot of things to do after you leave. The obstacles, in addition to just feeling isolated, is not knowing what to do. I think that, yes, they can, the teaching part, they've got that down pat, but it is classroom management. That's huge. New programs that the district rolls out, they'll need help with that. Small group reading skills, math groups, they know the content and they know how to teach, but it's just making sure that every box is checked, making sure our students get the best.
So, obviously, these new teachers, when they come in, they talk to their friends, they talk to other people that are getting into teaching, almost like a referral to come to Effingham. How important is it that we make sure that we help the most qualified teachers fill available roles in the district?
So, it's super important. I can say that. And like you said, teachers will bring other teachers. When we get fabulous teachers from other places, and if I said, okay, if your friend is as good as you are,
yes, ma'am,
bring them, tell them to come on to Effingham. we've had, we go out, we did Georgia Southern Senior Symposium, where we're going out there and we're meeting the students that are graduating. They've already done their student teaching and they're ready to graduate. We'll go out there, and one of the students, that student taught with us, he was going around, it was like homecoming at our booth there.
Wow.
Because he was bringing all of his friends, because he student taught with us. So he was bringing all of his friends in and, telling them how wonderful it is. Like, it's a great place to teach.
So that again, basically that's what it is. It's just referrals.
It is.
That's amazing.
And two, we go out with the student teachers we go out and meet with the people who are student teaching. Like, we're getting all of Georgia Southern's, a lot of Georgia Southern student teachers, and just sitting with them before, they're going to teach somewhere. And we want them to do a great job wherever they go. So we talk to them. We'll go out to each school and meet with them at each school and talk to them about financial planning, just anything like that, how to interview. We offer to help them sit, and if they want to go through some interviews and just practice some little mock interviews, we're offering any kind of help that we can possibly get them.
So do you feel like the program and the role that you have has helped make it more obtainable to keep these roles filled, the teaching roles filled in the county?
Yeah, teacher retention is super important. And I think that is how the whole program got started. Really, to take it to the next level, because the state school superintendent a few years ago put out that, there are some districts that are that they lose, 40-50% of their teachers.
Wow.
We do, within those first 3 years, we do not in Effingham.
Right.
We're sitting right around 90%. So, and that's great that if you can retain 90%, that's our goal, is teacher retention.
So has this made an impact on current teachers to continue this program when the next generation of teachers come through?
Absolutely. We've got teacher sponsors out in the school. Teachers they become mentors. It's amazing that some of our, after they've been with us through the program 3 years, then they do step out and they'll be a mentor to a teacher out at a school, because they have, in addition to district mentors, they have school mentors out at each school. So they're just getting help. If you want to be successful in education, then you definitely have everything sitting right there to help you. And I always tell them, don't wait until you're underwater to start. You know, you hold your hand up and you say, I need help, and we'll definitely get you the help that you need.
So you've got teachers ready to come up behind you to fill these roles.
Absolutely.
That's amazing. That is amazing. And that tells you the type of school system we have that cares.
Right.
It cares from the top all the way down and everywhere in between.
I agree.
So, well, thank you, Miss Carla, for joining
us
today. And we hope you have a happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
Kristen, on to you now. How are you today?
We're doing good.
So tell us, how long have you been with the Treatland House?
I have been with the Treatland House. This May will be 13 years I've been the director there.
Wow.
Yes. I know. I thought about that the other day. I was like, that's a long time. Doesn't seem that long. You know, they say when you're having a good time, time flies.
Right.
So, yeah.
Time flies.
How did you come about that?
So my background is in counseling, and I worked in corrections with at-risk youth right out of college. So for 15, 18 years, I worked with at-risk youth in whether day programs, all the way up to working with designated felons serving long juvenile life. So we had lost our contract, and I was working with my son and met Marshall Reeser, and he asked me, what did I do? What's my background? And he's like, oh, we're looking for a director over at the Treatland House. And I was like, oh, do I want to go back to work? I was at home with my boys, enjoying that. And I met with the director and the board director and decided, okay, I'm going back to what I'm used to, and been there ever since.
So, wow.
Yes.
And Marshall was the reason. How about that?
Marshall found me at a Boy Scout meeting.
Such a great guy. Good things always surround him.
Yes.
So what are some of your responsibilities at the Treatland House?
Basically, as the director, day-to-day operations, all the way down to grocery shopping every week, you know, making sure that the state is happy with what we're doing, meeting contract obligations, being in compliance with regulations, and then also making sure that the boys in the house, all their needs are met, that I'm hiring and having the best people in place for the kids. I really pride ourselves on, we do not have a lot of turnover. You see that a lot in social services when you work with kind of in a high stressful job, you see a lot of turnover. And every time the state comes in and reviews us, one of their comments is, these are all the same staff that were here last year when I came. I'm like, yes, you know, every year it's the same kind of thing. I've had staff there 10 years and more. It's the same group. There's 10 of us. We run it like a family. Yes, we do shifts, but it's kind of like 10 moms and dads, you know, kind of all in the house kind of thing. So
so you try to make sure that you have people in there that are going to care for the children as much as you care.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
That's awesome.
Yes.
That is awesome. So how does placement in the house go?
So we get referred. All of our children come through Department of Family and Children's Services, or DFACS as people know it. And we get, it's called a universal match summary. It has all the information about a kid, and they want us to make a decision based on, here's four pages that we have information on, but that's not how a lot of us do it. So we call, we ask a lot of questions, and it's not just based on that child, it's also based on the boys I already have in the house.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to bring somebody in that might upset another boy I have. It's
right.
Kind of like making a family and you picking and choosing who the brothers are, you know, kind of thing. So, and I tell, you know, caseworkers, he's not a great fit maybe for me right now because of what I already have.
Right.
But maybe would have been a good fit for me a year ago based on what I have, because I don't want to disrupt the boys that we already have at the house, kind of thing. And there are great group homes just in our area, in Statesboro and Brunswick. So I usually, if I do say no, I'm like, hey, why don't you call my friend so-and-so at this group home, or call, you know,
right,
that I would recommend for somebody else to go to if they can't come to our group home.
So how do you make sure to maintain stability and performance?
So that is my number one thing, is stability and permanency for the boys. A lot of them have been, I am not their first placement, some of them. So I don't want to see a kid bounce around the state. So you see a kid that, you know, they go to a group home, they get caught doing something and that group home disrupts them and they get moved around. But that doesn't make sense to me, because you have to teach how to come out of failure or how to come out of making mistakes. So if every time a kid makes a mistake, he moves to another group home, that's not teaching him anything, and it's not showing them that people care about them.
Right.
So we, you know, trudge through the tough times. We call it the honeymoon. You know, we get through the honeymoon, which is usually a couple weeks. We get through the tough times, which sometimes can last a year. And, you know, there's a lot of trauma that comes with the boys and stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do not like to disrupt a child for just basic stuff or whatever. Sometimes we're not the right fit. And sometimes it could be service-based, it could be mental health, it could be just location. You're so far away from your family that we're not able to reunify because of visitation, those kind of things. So when people ask me, like, how many kids have you served? We're not about numbers. I may only have served 12 kids this year. But that shows that I've had the same kids, you know, the whole time. So,
right.
So that's my number one, stability, permanency for the kids no matter what.
So how many boys do you currently have?
So I have 7 right now. We have 6 at the house, and I have 1 that is about to finish his first year in college.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
That's awesome. So what are some obstacles when new kids come in that you're faced with?
So first and foremost, the combination of the boys is, you know, a new kid comes in. It's almost like bringing that baby home for the first time, and how do the other siblings kind of react? You know, some are, let me put my arm around you and let me show you the ropes. Some are, okay, who's going to now be in charge? So now I'm going to be the alpha, you know,
yeah,
kind of thing. For the most part, they all know they're all there for some reason. So we're all here because of some sort of trauma that's happened to them. So there's a little bit of an understanding that already kind of goes on. Like, hey, I know what you're going through because I also am going through it too. I might not know your story, but the common denominators, we're all in foster care for
right,
one reason or another. They all go to the same school. All my boys are either at Ebenezer Middle or at Effingham High. We also serve Encompass and Crossroads. So they will go to school together, you know, so a lot of it is helping them with what's school uniform and what do you like to eat, and here's where you write what you want on the shopping list, and here's where our game room is, and that kind of thing. So that takes a couple of nights, but the last boy I took in, we knew we were gonna bring him in, and we knew what room he was going in, and the boys got together and put his bed together, got all the bedding, made his bed. Like,
oh, wow.
They're like, here's your shelves, and here's where you put your shoes. And so they kind of get a little excited when there's a new, you know, brother coming into the house kind of thing, which is fun to see them do that.
So when it comes to the school system, are you considered the parent?
Yes. So we register the kid. It's funny because I have a shirt that says mom of 3 because I have 3 boys, and every once in a while I'll wear it, and the boys at the house are like, that should say mom of 12, like mom to the 12th power, or mom to the 3rd,
right,
you know,
right,
because I get all the same phone calls that every parent does. So you think you get a phone call at night for your one child, I get 6 phone calls at night for every single boy, you know, that's
wow,
in the house. So at about 5:30, my phone starts to ring, and it's like, you know, please hold for a message. And I'm like, oh, here we go, it's going to be all of them. But yeah, so we register the kids, we attend all the IEP meetings, we attend all their sporting events, graduation, all that king, as if we're their parents.
And with the court system as well?
We do, yep. So we partner with DFACS as far as court system. A lot of my kids have CASAs, which is an amazing program for our kids to have a CASA worker or a guardian ad litem. We have behavior aides that are assigned to our kid, which is kind of a mentor that comes in and helps them with services outside of the regular therapy that they normally get. It's basically a huge wraparound services, including the school system. I've had teachers and administration from the school system help with court stuff, help with, you know, whether it's visitation with siblings. You know, we're all just kind of one big group here in the community serving all of the kids in my house.
So when it comes to the court system, how does that work in regards to a parent trying to regain custody?
Okay, so reunification, we do see it some. My boys are all older, so my youngest right now is 15. So a lot of times when kids are at that certain age, we're looking more towards independent living skills, independent living programs, which we have an amazing one in Pooler. and those kind of things, we don't see reunification as much as you do with the younger children. Mm-hmm. But we do work hand in hand with the parents. If they have parenting classes they have to attend, we really encourage visitation on a regular basis with our parents. And even if reunification doesn't happen while they're with me or before they turn 18, just that relationship that they keep with their parents. A lot of my kids understand, hey, I'm going to get my stuff together and do what I have to do, and you do what you have, you know, and then we'll come together at the right time, whether it's now or as an adult kind of
right.
thing. And we've had some really good success stories that reunification never happened, but the parent still is now very successful and in their child's life.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yes.
And do you ever find it hard to separate from the kids?
It is a weird thing. When I first started working with at-risk kids, I was right out of college, and it will consume you. So, like, you go home, you know, you take it with you, that kind of thing. So you have to kind of learn to separate. But my phone's on 24 hours a day. All the kids at the house have my cell number. So, you know, they can text me whenever they want. I'm kind of on call 24/7. But they do understand that I also have, because another life with my kids. But it's funny because I'll be like, oh, I'm going to the house. And people are like, which house are you talking? You know, like, are you talking about your personal house or are you talking about the Treatland house? And I'm like, yeah, I guess that would be kind of confusing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, both are kind of my homes. You know, I just have three boys at one and seven at the other.
So what are some fundraisers that the Treatland house has coming up?
So we're coming up on our biggest one that we do in the year, which is our 5K, 10K Summer's End Trail Run. It's always the first weekend after school starts. It's usually about the second weekend in August, and that's our largest one. And we really rely on a lot of sponsorships. So our goal is, we're still in the process of raising money. Our kitchen's 25 years old, and it really needs some renovations. So we're hoping to raise close to $50,000, and we're a little over halfway through right now. With that, you know, you raise a little and then something breaks, so you have to take from the pot and then you raise a little. So that is our goal within the next year or so. We just is to renovate our kitchen and kind of get that project done.
So aside from the fundraisers, how can the public contribute to the Treatland House?
There's tons of ways. We're always looking for sponsorships for the boys. So whether it's a Sunday school group, just a family, somebody that wants to sponsor just one particular child, whether, and it can be anything from just dropping cards off for holidays to you having them at your house for Thanksgiving kind of thing. We also work a lot with the clubs at the school systems, a lot of Beta Club. They do a lot of what we call drives for the mm-hmm. house, paper product drives, cleaning supplies. Those things add up in our budget. And so we've been super successful with those around town and with the school system. And then also we have organizations that do angel trees at Christmas for all to cover all the Christmas for the boys. So there's a lot of ways, whether it's even just picking up pizza and dropping it off at the house one night to give my staff a break from cooking dinner,
yeah.
Or buying movie tickets, or you know, we're wanting to go to Wild Adventures during summer. So any kind of thing. And then of course there's the usual just financial, writing a check,
right?
You know, those kind of
yeah.
things. So
okay. Well, we hope you have a happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being on this episode
yes.
with us.
Ms. Sanja Scott, so great to meet you. I've heard so much about you, and thank you so much for joining us today on Effingham Talks at beautiful Stillwell Pines. Thank you for coming on this special Mother's Day edition. You were highly recommended by your peers, and you know, we're just so happy for you to be here, and I feel like we got a lot of stuff to talk about today. And so before we get into that, tell us about yourself and your background.
Well, first of all, thank you. And I had to chuckle when I was highly recommended. But, you know, I'm grateful to God for the whole role of being a mother. I think it's a privilege and just an honor. I think it's still a very worthy vocation. So I love it. It is the best thing that I have ever done. And I've done a lot of stuff, if you know me. Basically, you know, Clio native, go Clio, back in a 70s, 80s baby, really born in 1966, but don't tell anybody.
Okay.
So.
We'll keep it a secret.
Keep it a secret. And, you know, just a good upbringing in the country, just kind of basic I would say just good values, hardworking mom and dad, mm-hmm. and went off to UGA. Of course, I'm a product of the Effingham County school system, where I'm currently employed at Effingham County Middle School.
Awesome.
And yeah, that was, I actually started in 1992 when there was one middle school and one high school. And was able to be an available mom, I think I want to call it that, mm-hmm. for over 20 years with three sons.
Okay.
Wow.
And then to return this year to work at the middle school, Effingham County Middle School, 8th grade in special education. So, yeah, my goal is to have 20 years home and 20 years on the job.
Okay. Wow. So let's talk about your education a little bit. What were your degrees in?
I got into the University of Georgia, and mm-hmm. I received a degree, a BA in public relations with a minor in business. Mm-hmm. Then I went on to obtain a master's in exceptional children from Armstrong Atlantic University, or currently Georgia Southern.
Right.
And of course, you know, I love school, so I'm also like a real estate agent. I've done that, an insurance agent. So I like to take tests.
Yeah.
I like to take tests. And so
I'm sure you've done some part of the trucking business too, right?
Yes. Well, my husband, Roger Scott Sr., we met when we were 8 at Effingham County. Well, at Springfield Elementary. I have to put that in there. We were 8 years old.
Okay.
And he is the love of my life. We have owned various entrepreneurial pursuits, from a restaurant, clothing store.
Okay.
But I think the thing that stuck the most, and which he just thoroughly loves, is Scott and Sons Trucking, and mm-hmm. we've been doing that for about 23 years.
Okay.
And I ran the front end of that business for 6 years, with children in tow and toddlers crawling around and being an available at-home mom, and it was thrilling, exciting, and a great adventure every single day.
Okay. So you get through school, you're trying to start a career up, but of course you start having kids, and you decide that, you know, I'm going to stay home with these kids until they're adults. And thankfully, you had a husband who could provide yep. that lifestyle.
Yes.
Can you tell us about your children and tell us, you know, some of their achievements and some of the things you've done as a mother for them to get them where they are today?
Well, let's see. My oldest son, Roger Jr., was 8 years old. Darius was 3 when, and then Isaiah was about 18 months. And it really just came to me at some point that I wanted something more. You know, at that time, we saw a huge rise in crime. We just saw I think, the fabric of our community. Things were changing. And I just really felt like I want to take some time to build a strong foundation for them. So, you know, talking with Roger, was at first it wasn't like, now how are we going to do this? So I said, you know, I'm going to stay home and just until Isaiah's 4. You know, we'll do it like that. But as the years went on, I just kept feeling, and really, you know, being a woman of faith, just really praying about the whole journey. And really, he just really spoke to me and said that there's so much more. Let's just start. And what I mean by that is the possibilities are just more than what I really first thought I could even obtain. So my oldest son, RJ, for example, he had some exceptionalities. He was born with congenital heart disease. And my goal at first for him was just to get through high school. You know, to be honest, I'm thinking, okay, let's just get him a regular education diploma, you know, let's just do that. But then, as my faith grew, really, I thought, RJ, what do you want to do? He says, I want to be a welder. Well, guess what? We enrolled him at Savannah Tech. He became a welder, even with, you know, a heart condition, even with some other cognitive delays and some other challenges. Really, those things work so well for him. So now, today, he's currently working at Edwards Interiors, mm-hmm. a local company. And I'm so grateful for Doug and his whole staff there, and, you know, his family, because they gave him a place to be and to learn. And so he's been there over 8 years. In fact, he's just purchased his first home at 30. And
I heard he had a little bit of help from somebody.
He had, well, in my free time, because I like to take tests, I'm a realtor. Again, this is my second time being a real estate agent. Mm-hmm. But I will say for RJ, just his whole life, he had to fight. He experienced some bullying in school. Mm-hmm. He had, huge health issues. So he just learned how to push through. And that is one of his key things, is his work ethic and persevering, and just a humble kid, because he realized that it would be so easy for him to, quote unquote, fail if he didn't just keep going. Because, kids with some of his exceptionalities, a lot of people didn't have expectations. So I had to keep advocating for him, had to keep saying, hey, there's more. Just, we got to tweak it a little bit. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the privileges, I think, and one of the great strategies of being a teacher who took a season to be an available mom, is that I could really see what was going on at school. And then when he came home off the bus, we had school again. And he did not appreciate that sometimes, but I just had a burning desire that I wanted him to be a productive part of the citizen of a community.
That's right.
I wanted him to be able to, one day if he wanted to, start his own family, have his own house, go on vacations, the dog, the fence, the whole thing. And I didn't think it was it was outside of the realm of possibilities,
right.
Even for a young man that had, he had some huge challenges. We just had open heart surgery for the second time again. Last year, he just also has hidradenitis suppurativa, which is an autoimmune disease. So he just has to keep going. And it's a daily fight to get up and, do all the things he has to do. Go to work on time, work all day, come home, and now to his own home. I'm just so grateful, because that was not what initially my thoughts would be. I was challenged at the beginning. I'm like, okay. But I'm grateful for his journey.
Can you tell us a little bit about his first heart failure? I know you were just telling us a little bit ago, but can you tell the community about that and how that tied you to the help system?
Yeah, honestly, I was teaching at, middle school, Effingham County Middle School again, and 6 weeks getting ready to go back to work. My mom was going to keep him, and one night coming from Bible study, he had cardiac arrest, and I happened to be in front of the Effingham County Hospital, the only hospital within 40 miles, and we rushed in and said, he's not breathing. And I'm sorry, I still get very emotional.
Absolutely.
Because
yes.
They said, we got him, and took him back in the back, and they brought him back to life. So from that moment, the story, the journey was quite long, but had it not been for that initial fast response and having health professionals in a rural area, I would not have my oldest son, and he's such a beautiful soul.
He really is,
and so God had great purpose for him.
And that led you to the hospital board later.
So an opportunity came to work with the hospital board, and Dr. Witt is just a phenomenal woman, and just her and staff or crew, support the board. It was just a worthy cause, and I just, had a passion about that. Just until recently, when I went back to teach full time. We are strong advocates of rural health. It's worthy, it's necessary that we mm-hmm. support it. Be sure we keep hospitals and facilities close by, because it's the matter of life and death.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. It's just not a matter of convenience. For us, it was life and death, so I'm grateful for rural health. So, yeah, that's how my motherhood started. Phew. That was my first child, and it was not a chapter in the book that said, this is what's going to happen in the first chapter,
Right.
I didn't have, upset tummy issues. No, we had a cardiac arrest.
Yeah.
We had, cardiac arrest.
Yeah.
So. And he ended up having open heart surgery at 7 months old, and we really thought we were one and done with that, but it wasn't until recently that we went in for some other health issues that the overall screening there at Mayo Clinic in Minnesota just said, hey, we see some deficits in his cardiac system. And of course, I'm thinking, it's probably you know, something a pill can fix. Well, no, lo and behold, we had to have open heart surgery again. And so last year we spent about 40 days in Minnesota for him. And then in the middle of that, I will say he did not lose his job. Doug was very gracious and so supportive. Okay. That he came back, and when he came back, I think within that first month he got a raise. So
wow,
I'm really grateful. And it was last year he missed 7 months of work, and this year he qualified to own his own home.
That's just
awesome.
This is a testament to how great this community is. You know, we're all working together.
Yeah.
I understand that your son has some a program or Facebook pages and website stuff.
Tell
us about that.
He decided to give back, and we created an organization called Scarred Hearts. And it's basically, we sponsored our first health forum at our local Starbucks here on Highway 21. Rod Hall, big shout out to you for that, for just believing in that vision. And we had about 30, 40 people come and just hear the testimonies from people that had cardiac issues, disease, et cetera, surgeries. But Scarred Hearts can be found. You can just Google Scarred Hearts. And there's also a Facebook to go with that. And we utilize the funds that we raise to contribute to other nonprofits that support heart issues and even travel. But for us, we realize the challanges of traveling, flying back and forth to Minnesota, hotel stay, food, you know, it was quite an undertaking. And I'm so grateful for support from the community, but also just from, you know, my spouse, just my immediate family, just everybody just saying, you know, we just have to do what we have to do. And it was just a beautiful thing. It was just a beautiful experience.
So, wow. I mean, all right, teaching.
Yes.
Running small businesses from anywhere, from restaurants to trucking, raising special needs children, going to school, getting a great education, you know, mothering three successful children into the school system, into the help system. Is there anything you can't do? Well, hold on a second.
I can't quit. I can't stop.
I missed one thing.
What did you miss?
Can you write a book?
I did write a book. So in my spare time in graduate school, I had a professor read a project, and he said, hey, you ought to publish this. And I thought, no, you're just kind of joking. But later on, he said, no, you ought to do something with it. So anywho, it's the whole concept is on metacognitive strategies, you know, because I like school a lot. I like school a lot. So I could go to school for a living. And I'm still looking for my PhD. So that's something in the future. Not so far from now.
That should be a breeze.
Well, you know, I might have to talk to the Lord about how much of a breeze it's going to be. But yeah, I wrote a children's book called Ikio, I-K-I-O, Learns to Fish. And it's a book about a little boy learning to fish, but he wasn't on the ocean or in a boat, but it was about the concept. And it's really teaching you about patience. You know, learning takes patience. Learning takes resilience. And one of the ways that I made my book a little bit different, that the different animals represent the different attributes and the different characteristics that you need to be a great learner. So, if, for example, the Asiatic bear, it represented being relentless. So great learners are people who just don't stop.
That's right.
They just kind of go through. And then, you know, the cat in the book represented like strategy. They learn things like, I need to study for 2 hours, and then I need a 30-minute break. They learn themselves and how to learn. And so those things, strategies and techniques, can really be taught. And so I look forward to implementing some of that in my classroom in the upcoming year. And metacognitive strategies, Akio Learns to Fish. I have a video on YouTube that will just kind of explain it a little bit more. But
what's the video called?
It's under Sanja R. Scott video. You can see that, and it's Akio, I-K-I-O, Learns to Fish. And it's just me explaining all the strategies, because like I said, I love learning. And and that's one thing that one of the keys that I try to instill in all of my children. In fact, I think my second son, Darius Elias Scott, was born and he was reading at two, and I thought, okay. I really thought my mom was teaching him how to read, but she wasn't. He was just, he came out just learning. So he was a kid. He went on to just do a lot of stuff. He was like the three-time Georgia Rotary Club speaker, champion for the state. He ended up being the triple jump, winning first place in triple jump in the state of Georgia, and then going on to Iowa to become the national champion for triple jump, and could jump over 50 feet as a senior. He jumped his way. He got the attention of a lot of schools, but
I bet.
50 feet. It doesn't hurt. He was like a 3.8 GPA. Uh-huh. He had a resume that was quite full of activities.
Right.
He was a volunteer, did lots of stuff, did some fundraising. He also had a human trafficking initiative that we traveled doing that. So everybody, that was his platform, you know. Mm-hmm. So he ended up being recruited by Cornell University, and he signed with Cornell and became a graduate last year in mm-hmm. biological science with an emphasis in neuroscience. And this year he just finished his master's at Mercer in clinical research, and so segueing onto to med school. So that's what he's preparing to go to medical school to become a neurologist.
Awesome. So he likes to go to school like his mom.
He likes to go to school. What
he
is
likes
it?
Tests.
Did I tell you I grew up in a schoolhouse?
No.
I actually grew up, my father loved carpentry, and his brother, they actually purchased the colored school, the segregated school mm-hmm. in Clio, a huge rectangular building. Split it in half and raised their families. I actually grew up in my bedroom was a classroom. Our kitchen was a stage, and it was the school where my mom went to school in that building.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it's like crazy. And my favorite tour, of course, was a chalkboard. And my first student was my younger brother.
Oh, wow.
And that is why he's so successful today. He is a lieutenant colonel at the 165th here in Garden City.
Really?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so it's just two of us. He's also a...
So you knew from an early age UGA you wanted to grad. Be a teacher.
Well, I thought I wanted to do many other things, and I'm grateful for the journey because I picked up a lot of things along the way. But I think naturally I'm going to scaffold things when I explain things. I think naturally I'm going to kind of repeat things. I'm going to try to ignite a passion in you to learn the information, because that's pretty much what good teaching is about. It's not a push. It's just putting a carrot out there and trying to getting you to connect to the carrot. Like, why is this something worthy of learning? I love learning. Yeah, yeah. And my boys, my youngest son is a graduate from, will graduate in 2-3 weeks from Cornell as well.
Oh, congratulations.
Wow.
And so in the next 3 weeks, we'll have two big ceremonies. I'm very grateful. He actually... went to study environment and sustainability with an emphasis in ornithology. So last year he was able to travel with me as his guest, because he was only 20, and I'm excited about it because we went to Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, all under a sponsorship. So he travels quite extensively, and he's been doing this since he was 14. So here again, his giftedness was, I love everything nature. And I don't want to wear matching socks, but I can draw birds on, you know, scrap pieces of paper. He could sculpt out of hot dog aluminum foil. So I knew he's an artsy kid. But exactly what ornithology was, even how to spell it, I didn't quite have all of that under wraps. But the Lord kind of led us into these different rooms and these spaces, and he ended up at Cornell as well. So actually, they were there together for a year. Yeah, I had a senior and a freshman there.
Well, that was good to kind of have somebody there.
Oh, that was phenomenal. And then Darius got a job at the Lab of Neuroscience at Cornell. So he actually stayed there for an additional year. They actually spent 2 years there.
Wow.
And it was such a gift, you know, because he served as his brother's mentor. And but the Cornell Lab of Ornithology is the top ornithology school in the world. And
really?
He was APA. Yeah. So, I mean, really, you're surprised. I was surprised too. So, when he got there, it was just, a total community that was embracing. You know, we've traveled and did work from Arizona, California, Maine, and people basically, he earned a living from sponsorships, like going birding and birding in different places and doing research or photography or just actually videos of him birding. So his Instagram is @Ike's Birding Hikes, and he has over 100,000 followers. And that
exactly is birding?
I had the same thing too. Like, what are we doing? Well, after going birding for about 7 years, it's basically you don't have to have binoculars, but it would be good. You take your journal and you're going in and you're trying to find out what species are in certain areas. You observe their habitat. You're basically watching their migration. It's very exciting to have birding reports of, for example.
Is it the same as bird watching?
Bird watching. It's sort of like when you see migration, they'll say, hey, flamingos were spotted at so-and-so. And then all of a sudden, everybody's planning a trip. We're headed down, we're going to go see the flamingos, and the photographers show up and the researchers show up and whatever. But I've learned a lot about birding and bird watching. We've been in the Ace Basin all the way to Arizona, out in northern San Francisco, California, out in Maine, Hog Island, all through Florida, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina. Where have we not been? And then, of course, we went birding in Colombia, South America. Was the most exciting birding trip ever. Costa Rica, Ecuador, the Galapagos Islands.
Beautiful.
Yes, we did a 10-day land-sea train trip there, sponsored by Lindblad Expeditions. You can look them up, too. Fabulous company for adventure cruising, and it's just... Wow, we were able to see just species of birds that are just only seen in the Galapagos.
In the islands, yeah.
And it's just phenomenal. And I think the thing for me is when you would approach a bird, they wouldn't fly away because they don't identify humans.
Yeah.
So I have pictures. I mean, literally, I'm just meeting a bird, like having lunch. You know, I mean, it's just like they don't know that I'm, they don't see any, kind of danger.
Right.
And it was just... It was just breathtaking. And so that's where his career took him. And he just turned 22. And he's also an artist. So he has done, in fact, we just got through teaching a master class with the Gibbs Museum in Charleston. And he also does water. I teach the business agent side of art.
Yeah.
And he... teaches all that he does the art for real.
Right.
And he's also had an opportunity to teach watercolor classes there. He paints with gouache as well. He's also a keynote speaker. And so we actually have art shows and sell, prints. He will also do originals, t-shirt designs, interior designs. Somebody wants art of any kind, you want to do owls, he'll do an owl for you. So early on, I bought an inordinate amount of art supplies. My house is filled with art supplies. It's filled with, athletic resistance bands and all kinds of stuff for Darius's platform. And it's filled with Scarred Hearts t-shirts and all things RJ Scott. So because I think supplying and them with the materials to play in it, that's how the creativity is. Like, creativity is very messy.
Right.
So you have to have a mess first.
That's right. Yes. That's right.
So, you have to start with the, sculpting birds out of aluminum foil at a game. And it has to, you're not going to just have a straight line. And so one thing I really recognized early was it's okay to have art supplies all over the place, or it's okay to have there's this workout gear in the foyer of your house or wherever. I just feel like you have to start with all of that, and then some things, like we also did archery. I did like archery, basketball, football, taekwondo, birding, triple jump. Let's see what else we did. Gun range. We did a lot of stuff. Not all of it stuck. We have to start with all of that.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And then you pare down. You
figure out what they like.
You're the true definition of a renaissance.
Yeah. Well, one year, you know, I was a room mom for every year. You know, it was the basketball mom. But I tell you what, I would give thousands of dollars just for one day with each son in one of those days. Mm. I mean, it is priceless.
Yeah.
Just the sheer joy and awe of seeing God work through their lives and to see their maturity and their growth. And, you know, I'm just privileged to be able to have that front row seat. That's pretty much what that was about. Like, I can't say I did all of that. I just wanted to say that we leaned a lot on prayer. I leaned a lot on what next, you know, how should I go, what direction. So, you know, we did a lot of crazy stuff. Like one time I thought, I'm going to take my son to a track exhibition at the Ivy Leagues. And a lot of people that I shared my idea with thought, you're going to do what? I said, yeah, I believe that that Darius is going to be recruited by someone in the Ivy League. And they're like, that's going to be a stretch. You're here at South Effingham. You're in Rankin, Georgia. I'm like, But through a series of events, I ended up signing him up for a track, like a training camp, and it was at Harvard.
Oh, wow.
And he was a junior. Well, a basketball coach at South Effingham said, hey, they have a basketball camp at Harvard. Darius has a great GPA. Why don't you just fly him up?
Yeah.
But then after some prayer, it was like, not basketball, track.
Track.
So we all flew, all three boys flew up to Harvard, and we walked back and forth to the Harvard campus while Darius went to his training. But at that camp was Columbia, Harvard, you know, all
Cornell.
Well, let me tell you, this is how God worked. Cornell was the only school that was not there.
Oh.
But we did tour Harvard, and we had Dartmouth. We said, hey, look at us. You know, hey, we talked to. But at the end, all those coaches talked to each other, and I would say within 30, 40 days, Cornell coach sent him an email and said, hey, we heard about you. Can we fly you up to Cornell? And so I said, fly you up? No. But you can fly us all up. So we all flew up to Cornell. And that's kind of how it started. And so much of it was just God-led. And I just want to emphasize that mothering is God's idea. It was his idea.
Right.
And he definitely supports and blesses women who, you know, have made a choice. And I had a privilege, but I also made a choice that I wanted to have this time. And I'm gifting 20 years to my children because they're not always going to be children.
Right.
And I get to start all over again. This is why I returned to Effingham County Middle School. And wow, but I had a fantastic journey and experience with them, you know. They were like my prototypes, right?
Yeah.
So I'm just like, okay, let me see if I can go create not versions of my kids, but let me help other kids find their passion, their paths, connect them with resources, inspire them that it's okay. Work hard. Mm-hmm. You'll be all right.
And thank you for doing that.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, from F&M Talks, from the bottom of our heart, I just want to thank you so much for being such a great mother and building a family, almost a dynasty here in Effingham that has made a staple stone here in Effingham. And, you know, in true form of Mother's Day is, you know, for all those mothers out there that are listening, you know, some of the new mothers, some mothers that are just in the troubled times of their lives with their kids and everything. Can you just give some words of wisdom, some blessings out there to them so that they can believe in something, keep going?
Well, trouble will not always last. It's just a season. So the sleepless nights, the sleep deprivation, the Cheerios all over the floor, the I don't want what you're cooking, I need something else, you know. I was there. The stomach virus, the puking and vomit, you know, all of that, the homework. If you, at this moment, it looks like it's so close to you, like, oh my gosh, it's never going to change. But it's just a season. And then keep putting in that work, because after a while, you keep putting the seeds in the ground, you keep watering the seeds, adding some sunshine. Of course, there's going to be some rain, but you will reap a harvest if you faint not. Mm-hmm. You're going to reap a harvest if you don't quit. So it's just about just keep going, get some rest, use your resources, you know, spend some quiet time, but also the season is going to change. And you're going to reap a harvest, and your children are going to rise up and call you blessed. That's what the word of God, it gives us that promise. So it's worthy, and God is with you. He is.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story. I know I feel blessed. And I'm
sure I do too, yes.
And, you know,
you're so inspiring.
You define motherhood. But you know what I'm saying, and I think that, you know, everything you've done is just wonderful, and I think the whole county and community should be blessed for somebody like you and your family. But thank you for coming out to wonderful Stillwell Pines, hopefully you will join us again sometime.
Thank you. I'm so blessed to be here, and thank you so much for this opportunity.
So, Ms. Sandy Gibson, you carry a lot of titles and positions in this county that is the reason you're here, that has to be a strong person, strong mother to handle. But I want to say, personally, I know there's many a times I've picked up the phone and called you. I've been in a frantic, and from all different types of aspects of my life, and you're always like, Frank, just breathe. It's going to be okay. And so I just want to thank you for all the motherly advice that you've given me throughout the years that I've known you, because I know sometimes I can be hard to handle. and we're going to dig into all your positions here. Let's start off with the manor house. Tell us what your position there is and the work that's going on there.
Manor house, for those who may not know, is located in Rincon. We provide food for almost 400 families a week. Every Wednesday morning, we're out there handing out food. Every week, we have new families. It's hard to see that we have these new families, but we're very happy that they have come to Manor House to help. We have the Manor House thrift store, and for those who do not know, the Manor House, the food store, the store raises money for the food pantry. For every dime that the store earns, we can buy 10 pounds of food. Wow. So it's a good thing. So if you want to shop and they have some really good stuff, they have new furniture, they have wafer furniture, there's new comforters, there's sheets, there's all kinds of stuff. The store is open on Thursdays from 9 to 2 and on Saturdays from 9 to 12. So come shop at Manor House to help us buy food for those who don't have a way to get it.
So y'all do a food drive weekly, correct?
Yes, every Wednesday morning.
So, but how many people come through there? Do y'all service an estimate?
About 300 to 400 people.
Wow.
Families.
So that's 400 individual or families that y'all are servicing every week and getting food out there to them.
Yes.
That is amazing. I can't imagine. How long does that take to get that many people through there?
Well, they start at McCumber at the ballpark, uh-huh. And everybody's lined up, and then they send them over. They start. It's kind of like the school drop-off and pick-up line. You know, they don't do it till this certain time, but then like an hour and a half ahead, people are already lined up. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty much the same thing. They start over there, they come through. We start handing out food sometime between 7:30 and 8 o'clock, and we go until 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And we go until 10 o'clock. So you shuffle a lot of cars through. We have a lot of volunteers, and we could not do anything without those volunteers, but we always have a good time. You know, the volunteers, the people are happy to see us, we're happy to see them. So it's a good Wednesday morning. It's fun.
So that was the next question I was going to ask, was the volunteer, and I think I asked Ms. Liz Quarterman this when she was on. What is the manpower that y'all have to do that? The food drive, or anything, really? I mean, what is y'all's manpower?
We have like 6 to 10 paid employees, mm-hmm. But we have like 200 volunteers. Wow. There are different things to do. There's the store. There's putting stuff out. There's working on with the store hours when it's open. There's a processing because people can drop off donations off at the manor house. And so somebody has to go through all that stuff and say, this is good. We're going to keep this, put it in the store. This is not good. We're going to move it on to someplace else. There's the food pantry. All those bags that we hand out on Wednesday morning have to be bagged up. So there are a lot of church groups that come on Sundays and Mondays and Tuesdays that will help do that. There's just at the office. There's people that work in the office that take care of the telephone, that register all those people. All those people that we hand food to have to be registered. So they have to come in and do all kinds of paperwork. If you have a child or children under the age of 17, then there's a state program that we can give extra food for. So there's a lot of vaccine stuff that goes on, but there are a lot of different positions and volunteers. So if you would like to volunteer at the manor house, just give them a call. They'll sign you up somewhere.
They'll put you to work, huh?
They will put you to work, yes.
Sounds like a lot of work. And, you know, as far as you've been secretary at the Lutheran Church, right?
Yes, Joyce Lamont.
And I feel your pain there because, you know, I'm, of course, being secretary in other organizations. That has to have a lot because you're taking care of many personnels and many persons. So enlighten us what it's like to be the secretary of a church.
I have office hours on Tuesdays and Fridays. But nobody told me when I got this job that there was a lot of on-call things. Mm-hmm. People call and ask questions. People call and want to know stuff. And it's like, I'm not at the church. I can't tell you. So, you know, it's a lot of stuff. I do a lot of bulletins. Mm-hmm. We just got through with Easter, and there are a lot of different services. So it was a lot of bulletins. So it's settling down a little bit now. It's just answering the phone, doing the paperwork, keeping everybody moving in the right direction. It's like any other secretarial job. You mm-hmm. just there are a lot of fingers and a lot of pies. Yes.
Right. So what is the membership count there? Do you have
the membership count on paper mm-hmm. or on Sunday morning?
Both.
There's a big difference. Yes. On paper, we have about 150 members. Mm. On Sunday morning, we have about 50 members. Now, last Sunday, being Easter, there were a lot of people there. This morning, we had about 35. Mm-hmm. So, but it's called low attendance Sunday for a reason.
Mm-hmm. So, for the people out there listening that haven't grown up here in Effingham and are not familiar with everything in Effingham, can you give us a brief history of the Lutheran Church there?
Of Jerusalem?
Yes.
Sure. In 1733, the Archbishop then of Austria said, you either become Catholic or you get out. So about 20,000 people got out. So a lot of them went to other areas in Europe and in that area. 300 came here. And I have to tell people, think Sound of Music. Think of Julie Andrews on the mountaintop and how beautiful it is. And they came here. So culture shock. Yeah. There was nothing here. Savannah had only been established the year before. So this would have been March of 1734 when the German-speaking group got here. So General Oglethorpe said, we're going to give you this land north of us between here and the Yuchi Indians. So they're like, okay. So they brought them up and they put them at what was Ebenezer, which was a low-lying area. And so those 300 people did not do well. So within a couple of years, they did not ask permission, but they decided to beg forgiveness. They moved up to the higher bluff, which is where the church currently is. So the land was better. There were fewer mosquitoes. There were, I just can't imagine coming from Austria to alligators. Yes. So the settlement did well. And then we had the Revolutionary War. So what the current church, the building was started in 1767. It was completed in 1769. And as you know, the Revolutionary War was right after that. So the town was laid out all around the church. If you're familiar with the area, you know where the cemetery is. It was from the river to the cemetery. And it was a town. There were homes that were there. People had homes in town. And they had property outside of the town. They could do farming. They could do dairy. They could. That was their property to do whatever they wanted to with. So when the Revolutionary War came, there were some that were still loyal to King George because he let them come, gave them this land. But there were some that were tired of paying taxes to King George. And so that started the split. So some people stayed in town. Some people moved out to their outer property. And so the town continued there. Other German-speaking settlers were coming in because it was the only German-speaking settlement in the area. So naturally, they all gravitated to that area. So they rolled along until we came to this thing called the Civil War. And so then you had those who were wanted slavery. They didn't see an issue with it. And you had those that said, this is not right. So again, there was a split. So, and then our friends from the north marched through and people said, nah, we're not staying here. So they all moved outside of town. And the town itself died. So the only building left is the church building. So, I mean, if you could, they've done digs out there, you can find all sorts of things. But so the only thing left is the church. And it's the oldest public use building in the state of Georgia. And Jerusalem is the oldest continuous Lutheran congregation in America.
So I had a question. The retreat center across the street from you, those houses that they have out, those older houses, that's not part of
they're replicas. Yes.
Okay.
The retreat center was laid out sort of the way the town was. It was laid out in squares because General Oglethorpe planned it.
Right. So where I have the most experience with you is you know, with the Effingham Rainbow Assembly, and for the people out there that don't know about the Effingham Rainbow Assembly, it's an organization subordinate to the Masonic Lodge there in Springfield for young ladies. And this was brought to the lodge's attention about 3 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
And they brought us the idea. They said, we're going to bring some young ladies in here. And they told us about the philanthropy. And then I said, well, who's going to be looking over these girls? And so it was kind of a culture shock for the lodge, because we have went 100-something years or many more of just us guys in a lodge, and now we're bringing in ladies with young ladies into this lodge. And so when I found out, I said, well, who's going to be the leader of these ladies? And so they said, it's going to be a Miss Sandra Gibson. And that's where I met you.
Yes.
And that's where we've gone from there. So I would like for you to, as the leader and the mother of these young ladies, I would like for you to just tell us your side of the organization.
Okay. The International Order of the Rainbow for Girls is over 100 years old. I have been associated with Rainbow since December of 1992. That's when my daughter was old enough to join. So, I've been in different positions, different areas. It's always something that I've enjoyed. My daughter, when she first started, was very shy, very bashful. She would not talk to anyone. You know my daughter. She will talk to this bottle of water. She will talk to anybody. But Rainbow did that for her. It was really good at getting girls, I won't say really comfortable with public speaking, but more comfortable with public speaking, because for their meetings, they learn different parts and they say these parts out loud to, and so other people, so they have to speak, they learn to speak. So that's a good thing. They meet girls here, they meet girls all over the state, and then they can meet girls all over the country. Plus, it's the International Order of Rainbow for Girls. So there are other countries that have rainbow assemblies. So it's a really good thing.
Right. So in this organization in Springfield, We have some young ladies, I think two right now, that are handicapped or can't get up the stairs. They need assistance getting up the stairs. And so we took the initiative a couple years ago to raise money. And the girls took this, and they were going to raise money to build, to get an elevator or lift put inside of the lodge to get the handicapped children upstairs. Not only the handicapped children, but the elderly and handicapped of the lodge. And so, led by Miss Sandy, they were able to raise close to $5,000 now to put towards that. And we can say now, I know this is a question you've been asking me for the last 6 months, we can now say that the lift is done.
Yay!
It's, they've successfully put it in about a week ago, and now that the girls can get up and down the stairs through this lift, I know you're going to be happy about it.
They will be very happy.
Right. So, does the organization currently have any fundraisers?
We do. Uh-huh. We just finished a fundraiser. We sold Easter lilies to different places, mostly churches. Our current fundraiser is a Mother's Day basket. We have tickets. We sell these tickets for $5 a ticket. We have a basket, handmade basket. It's being filled with different items. I have some stuff from Bath and Body Works. There's going to be gift certificates in there. The girls are, and parents are, more likely their parents will be bringing stuff in to put in this basket. So the basket itself is worth about $100. So anything that goes in it extra is just what there's. In the last 2 years, we've done this, so we do pretty good making mm-hmm. money.
And I've talked to the mothers that have won it in years before, and they've always been very pleased with the basket. So when are you going to raffle that off?
The basket will be raffled off next Sunday after our regular Rainbow Assembly meeting, and we will be doing a live Facebook, and we'll raffle off the basket then.
And what are the meeting times for the girls?
The meetings are the first and third Sundays of the month at 2:00.
Okay. All right. Well, it was great having each of you on, but I got a question for each one of you to end the show. In the spirit of motherhood, I would like for each one of you to give some words of encouragement to young mothers out there that are finding this motherhood stuff hard to do, and kind of give them a little bit of motivation, because you are looked up to your peers as being mothers, not just of your family, but just mothers of this community.
Yes.
So, and I'd just like for each one of y'all to kind of weigh in. Let's start with you, Ms. Cola.
So I would think advocate for your child always. Never think, oh, should I do this or not? Whatever position that you are in, advocate for your child. Not saying that if they're doing something wrong, of course, you know, but there are a lot of times, and I had a friend tell me that one time, that was a teacher, and she said, I never want to ask questions. I don't want to do anything like that, you know, to upset the boat. And, you know, but we talked about it, and you always advocate for your child, whatever it is. And kids are not perfect. That's another thing. Kids do things that you did not raise them to do. So you have to, you know, just knowing that kids aren't perfect, and you just need to support your child.
Kristen?
I would say definitely have some patience if you have more than one.
Yes.
And surround yourself with support, whether it's other mothers, yes, people like-minded, you know, whether it's interest. And then the one thing that I have the most trouble with is find time for yourself. You have to have a good balance of motherhood, but then don't lose yourself in that, you know, have your own identity also.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Miss Sandy?
Listen to your child. Listen, because don't just listen to their words. Listen to their actions. I mean, pay total attention.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just go with what you think you're hearing. Actually, listen to what they're saying, and also just keep moving forward. Just don't get stuck with what happened yesterday. Mm-hmm. Keep That's right. moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, ladies, for coming on. And I hope that each one of you have a very special Mother's Day. And I hope that maybe sometime in the future we can bring you back on for other episodes.
Definitely.
And just have a great Mother's Day, and thank you for everything you do for this community and this county.
Yes, thank you.
I just want to say I have tickets for the Mother's Day basket if anybody wants any.
Okay.
That's a lot more advertising than Frank's done. I haven't seen him posted on social media yet.
Okay. Well, everybody knows now that Miss Sandy's got a Mother's Day basket tickets for sale. Maybe we'll put that out there today on the.
There you go.
There you go.
All right.
That's right.
Thank you, guys.
You're welcome. All right.